This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Talking the talk with head tongue to toe. Walking the walk. Education can be so awkward. Spotlight. On Academics We Know.
Kia ora, haere mai, and welcome to Spotlights on Academics We Know, the podcast. I'm your host, Adrian Buckingham, in Otapoti, Dunedin. Join me for conversations with lecturers, researchers, and practitioners about contemporary challenges, ideas, and potential opportunities for education and upskilling. Learning can be awkward. We aim to normalize the discomfort of being at the edge of new knowledge. This is so awkward. Dr. Jill Hayhurst holds a PhD in civic engagement and well-being in young people. Jill has spent her career investigating the science of resilience, positive youth development, and generosity. Jill is well-published in a range of psychology journals and likes to run up hills. Kia ora, Jill.
Kia ora, Adrian.
Welcome to the Otago Access Studio. Oh, it's nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, well, let me ask the first question, which is, who are you? Why are you here?
You just told everyone who I am. Kia ora, my name is Jill, and I work at Otago Polytechnic teaching youth work, and I've got a background in psychology, and I've done a lot of really fun research projects, which I think we'll be talking about today.
Yeah, I think we will. So I guess the first question is, whakawhanakatanga, how do we know each other? When did we first meet, and what was your first impression? And what was mine, I can share.
We first met at the Otago University, and you were just starting your master's, and I was somewhere in my PhD. I don't know what year it was, because it's all a blur. It's I also had a baby at some point in that time.
You might have been pregnant when we met as well,
yeah, so
but it was somewhere in the realm of time before COVID.
Before COVID.
At Otago University.
In the psychology department.
Yeah. And that was a pretty short and brief introduction, I think, really.
Yeah.
And then we've come back around, and you interviewed me for a job about a year and a half ago.
That's right. Oh, it's Adrian. I know her.
Yeah. And you were, I remember from that interview, you were interviewing me for the Certificate of Health and Wellbeing at Otago Polytechnic. And you were so funny, and you were making jokes about how we sorted out disputes in the department by arm wrestling. And
that's a joke I stole from Jackie Hunter.
Oh, fantastic. Credit where credit's due. So you're referencing another psychology professor at the university. I love that even when you're just having a general conversation, you're doing your referencing.
Yes, including my APA formatting.
Yeah.
Get that
right.
Yeah.
Oh, good stuff. Well, I guess the first question I have for you is about the research that you've been engaged with. How has research shaped your professional path? How did you get involved?
Research is my professional path. So I came over to New Zealand many years ago to do my final year of undergrad and to go rock climbing. I'm originally from Canada. And I was almost finished my psychology degree, and I was thinking, why have I done this degree? And I just started my final semester, and I sat down in my first ever social psychology course and thought, ah, this is it. This is me. And that was being taught by Jackie Hunter. And it was just such a fun and engaging course, and I kind of felt finally that I was able to apply some of my learnings to what was happening in the world around me. So we were looking at things like prejudice and self-esteem and, you know, more dark topics like why does genocide happen and just all sorts of really interesting stuff. And he's a very engaging lecturer, so... Oh. At the end of that semester, I worked up all my courage because I'm a very shy person. And I
Are
asked,
you really?
I surprisingly, I know it doesn't seem like it to you because we know each other. But I worked up all my courage and I asked Jackie if he had any student internship type thing for me. And he did. So I worked with him over the summer, which was really fun. And then I went back to Canada as I was expected to do. And then Jackie got in touch. Oh, what was I doing? I was teaching rock climbing or something. And Jackie got in touch saying that he had a research master's position job for me and study opportunity for me to go on a tall ship and study young people. And I thought, that sounds fun.
And fantastic.
That was the start of research, and then I've just gone from there.
Okay. And what's the most recent research you've done?
I have done a few small community development type research projects here and there. My last main research project was working on theory of mind on infants and youth, which is kind of the foundations of empathy. So when do infants, not infants and youth, infants and children, infants and toddlers, when do they start to realize that their experiences of the world are different from other people's experiences? So that was a 3-year postdoc that I did with Ted Ruffman, which was an absolutely delightful job because I got to work with parents and their infants or toddlers for about 3 years on and off, seeing them every few months. And I developed some friendships from that even, and the children were adorable. And of course, it's always hilarious doing research with little people because they don't do what you want them to do. So we trialed a lot of our assessments with my own toddler, who was the worst participant of them all in terms of, and one time she even paused everything we were doing to do a big poop. So that's the kind of fun you get to have when you're researching with little people.
Yeah, you realize control is an illusion.
Yeah, control is an illusion.
Yeah, and I think that's probably an important thing to remember when you're doing youth work as well, which is the job you're now lecturing in.
Yeah.
Is that right? So tell me a little bit about the youth work program.
We started a youth work diploma at Otago Polytechnic last year, so this is the second year of the program. It's 2 years long, and it's just really getting people prepared to work with all the complexities of working with youth. They might not poop their pants in front of you, but there's a lot of interesting things about working with youth as well. So that's been really fun, and it's been a lot of program development. And my colleague, Karen Carson, is awesome, and my students are absolutely awesome. So it's been really fun. It's been a cool
Sounds good. Cool job. So what's part of the curriculum for youth development? What are you looking at?
We're looking at, I can tell you about the courses that I'm teaching. So we do things like evidence-based practice, which is around understanding some theories and doing some critical thinking and around youth and youth development. I've got a course called Understanding Youth Development. Got youth identity and culture, which are huge parts of the way that young people are and interact in the world. This term I'm doing designing and delivering and evaluating interventions, which is all about making making youth interventions work for young people, so getting them really involved in the process. Next semester I'm doing supporting youth participation, which, as it sounds like, is about supporting youth participation. So, participation in so many things. So that'll be youth deciding what they want to participate in. And I'm excited about that one in part because it links to my PhD research, which was about civic engagement and youth participation and well-being and those relationships. So that's a very small sample of what we've been talking about. Karen does courses like building intentional relationships and preparing. Well, there's the course part of the diploma, but there's also placements where the students are working in the community with young people. So it's hands-on in that way as well as classroom-based.
That's a fantastic combination of different ways of learning. And it sounds like you offer your students a lot of one-on-one support.
Yeah. We're especially at the start of the program where we're really dedicated to our students and getting lots of feedback about how we're running the program so we can improve it as well.
Well, that sounds really exciting.
Yeah.
What do you like about learning? Why are you involved in education?
Oh, that's a great question. So learning Learning has been my whole life. I feel like I found something that I was good at, which was learning, and then just kept going. Like, I feel like I've been in the education sector. I have been in the education sector for my entire life in one form or another. Even when I wasn't at the university, I was still doing like research assistant jobs and teaching assistant jobs.
Or teaching rock climbing, which is still education.
I taught rock climbing. I've taught weaving. I've taught lots of different things. So, so I've always just loved learning. I'm a very curious person, and which is, you know, the foundations of being in the education sector, but also the foundations of being a good scientist. And I remember when I was in high school having a moment where I realized that I might be a bit more curious than some of my peers. I remember my my friend was like, she was plucking her eyebrows. And I was like, okay, plucking your eyebrows. And then she said, but if you wax them, they'll grow back slower. And I was like, I don't understand why that would work. That doesn't make sense. And she was like, it does, Jill. And I was like, but how does it work? And I guess what she would describe, I was pestering her for answers. And she just didn't care. She doesn't care. And that's when I realized that I ask a lot of questions. And I need to know how things work and understand things. She got really angry at me. So that was also when I learned about like interpersonal relationships and backing off in the right situation.
It sounds like having a curious brain is a great way to engage in the world, though.
It is. It's a good way to learn. And also, at some point during my grad studies, the 5 ways to well-being came out. And of course, that one of the ways to well-being is learning. And that... that was really affirming for me, and I thought that made a lot of sense. So that's something that I remind my Toyota, my students, a lot about.
Tell us a little bit more about the 5 ways to well-being, because there'll be lots of people listening that don't know what you're talking about.
5 ways. Well, hopefully I get this right.
I can help.
It came out of some research in the UK. So for a while they were talking, they started realizing that well-being was really important, along with, you know, economics and GDP and stuff like that. So they boiled down a lot of research for it. And it's not supposed to be very researchy or complicated. They kind of wanted to match it up with like eat your 5 colors a day or things that people can remember. I actually met the researchers at one of the conferences when I was over there. So they are learning, giving, take notice, be active, and connect. Oh, I remembered.
These are the ways that we look after our own well-being.
This is the ways we look after. And it does seem a bit simplistic when you just count them out like that. But actually, in all the times when I've been feeling low in various ways, that's what I go back to. I think, okay, so what am I missing here? Is it learning? It's often connection, because you get busy and you don't make time for those important relationships in your life. Mm-hmm. Being active, you know, that's just something that I have to remind myself. Actually, you need to go for a run up a hill. And then I do, and I feel better. And it's like, how am I at this point in my life where I still have to be like, remember, Jill, don't forget to run up a hill.
Mm-hmm. Exercise is always a surprise for me. Like, if I have a break from it and I go back to it and I get that endorphin rush, I was like, oh, yeah, exercise works.
Oh, right. Why does this not stay in my mind?
Yeah. Why aren't we doing this all the time? So learning can be really uncomfortable, as much as it's a joy. Part of learning is being exposed to something new or being put in a situation that you might not be entirely at ease with. So tell me about an awkward learning moment you've had.
Yeah, well, we were talking about this earlier, and I was talking about how, you know, mostly learning has been it's like a really positive experience for me, which is why I'm still doing this. But I do have a time about when I was trying to learn the guitar, and I was sitting outside with a bunch of my friends, and I was practicing my chords, and I wrote a song about a very nice-looking young man who we'd been rock climbing with. Uh-huh. And I was describing details of this man in singing format, and he walked around the corner like he was right there. And instead of being cool, which I should have done, I think back to this moment a lot, I should have just kept on playing and pretending it was not about him. I went, "Ah!" And I threw my guitar, up in the air and buried my head in my arms. So that's an awkward moment. And you know what? I have not really improved in guitar since then.
Did you hit a wall then?
I hit a bit of a wall. So you should push through those walls, listeners. Push through those walls. I didn't. And yeah.
And now?
And now I'm not a
guitar player.
And not a guitar player.
All right. So what mahi do you care about at the moment?
I feel like since coming to Otago Polytechnic, I've really improved my teaching skills. I think I was a really good lecturer when I was at the University of Otago, guest lecturer. And I know that because I used to get standing ovations for my lectures. I used to just pick the most interesting, most fun thing to lecture on as a guest lecturer. And the students really loved it. But coming over to the Polytech, I've had to really relearn the way that I present information. And I've improved, if I say so myself, I've really improved. And I find that whole information about teaching and the information about learning really interesting. And that's something I've been learning more about lately.
So what's changed in your style?
As a lecturer, I used to just stand in front of the class and then tell some funny jokes and talk about some interesting research. So now I include a lot more activities and a lot more discussions. Still probably the same amount of jokes and... I remember reading one study that showed that looking at cute animals can increase your problem-solving skills, and I've just taken that one study and run with it. I don't even know if it's been replicated, and just so now I just have cute animal slides in my lectures.
I can vouch for this. You're the desk behind me, and often I will see pandas or the odd goat.
I've just learned how to put GIFs into my lecture slides. So there's been some pandas, baby pandas rolling down hills. This is, next week, students, if you're listening, you're going to get some baby pandas. I do that. But I have a lot more activities and a lot more, it's a lot more interactive where the Toyota and the students are there. They're feeding back into what I'm explaining. So I really enjoyed learning more about that and improving my practice in that way.
It lets students lead, I think, a little bit more because they get to follow their own curiosity.
Yeah. And that's something that I knew because I had researched it and I'd worked in the youth work field and done that with the youth I've been working with. But I hadn't really done it in teaching before. Hmm. So, yeah.
So you're using the research to shape your practice.
I am. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good stuff. What difficulties, weto, or challenges are currently in your path?
What difficulties? I guess we're doing a bit of shifting in the education sector. So I'm hoping that we'll still be able to be really responsive to the community that we're providing workers for, I guess, and at a local level, like the community within Dunedin. I've been thinking about that a bit. I'm trying to do more research, so I've been focused a lot of my teaching. So I've got a few research projects, and that'll be a challenge, I think, just to find the time and manage that time.
Yeah.
And, of course, the big challenge, I've got two kids now, so making sure that I have enough time to be a great teacher and a great colleague, but also a great parent. And those are all kind of never-ending journeys, aren't they? You can't just mm-hmm. tick a box and say, yes, I have done this now.
Yeah.
They're all things that are complex.
Dynamic and changing.
And so that requires a lot of work, and I find that challenging sometimes. And I need to find time to run up hills and take care of my own well-being.
Yeah. So it's maybe the 24 hours in a day challenge.
Yes. Yeah. I was thinking when my students were talking about what superpowers we'd want recently, and I was wondering about what would happen if I needed less sleep. But I love sleeping, so.
Sleep is great.
Sleep is great. So maybe just stretching out time some other way.
Yeah. Rather than giving up something that you love and arguably is good for your brain and for learning.
Mm-hmm.
What are the potential losses and gains or wins in the work that you're doing at the moment?
In the work I'm doing at the moment, I think I just talked a little bit about that, but I've been thinking a lot about the research, climate, I guess, and especially in social psychology, we've been doing some good work around replication and trying to address some like publication bias problems that we have in the field. So those are things like something will be published and everyone will go, that makes sense, and we'll start incorporating that into our lives somehow, but it's only been published by one group of people one time. And actually, if you change the conditions slightly, it means that the effect might not exist anymore. So there's been a whole bunch of research on that that we're slowly addressing. I've got some of my findings from my PhD were not significant, which means that I didn't find the things that I was expecting to find. And it makes it – it's important work. I was looking at, like, generosity and belonging and civic engagement and well-being. If I had a finding like, oh, it looks like once they spend money on other people – their well-being increases, like that's a very publishable finding. But what I found is when people spent money on other people, their well-being didn't increase, and neither did their happiness, and neither did this and this and this. And those are important findings, but they're not something that necessarily journals want to pick up and talk about lots, because it's like, oh, it's a null effect, and people don't want to necessarily hear like, oh, hey, volunteering isn't good for your well-being, when we are so fond of that particular story. So I've been thinking about that a bit recently.
Yeah, that's fascinating. If you're finding the unpopular findings.
Yeah, one that doesn't fit with the story or just isn't that interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've got a question about one of your topics, which is civic engagement. Tell me, what does that mean?
Oh, yeah. Often when you get really into these, at this level of thinking about civic engagement, there's no... there's no one definition that everyone agrees on.
Okay, like all the good stuff.
As one of the people who marked my PhD will tell you. So civic engagement, the way I defined it, and mm-hmm. this is going back a few years now, is just wanting to contribute to your community or society in a pro-social way.
Okay.
So there's a bunch of and I was measuring a whole bunch of different things in order to capture this idea of civic engagement. So one of the things I was measuring was civic intentions. So things like, I will volunteer in the future, I will vote in the future, and does that feeling of intending to do civic things increase? Civic behaviors, so things like voting and volunteering, broadly. Like, some people say that civic engagement is only about the political aspects, like voting, but I studied young people, and of course, most young people are not allowed to vote. So I broadened that definition out. Lots of people have. This wasn't an original idea of mine. So things like voting, volunteering, helping a neighbor, being involved in activism, you know, going to protests, writing letters. So just really all these things are civic behaviors. So mm-hmm. how often have you done that? How often, you know, how many times a year? And then what was
that? You were doing that research on young people in Dunedin?
That was nationwide.
Okay.
So I was really lucky. My friend Lonnie Evans, along with some others, were doing a road trip around Aotearoa and running young changemaker events in every single region. So I was invited along to study that. And that was just so much fun.
Sounds like an incredible
experience. So much fun. So that took about 5 or 6 months. And we started up in Nelson. And then we looped the South Island. And then we took a little break. And then we did the North Island. So 10 regions, 10 events, and then a lot of other community and school events and talks and just meeting amazing people, staying on Marae. It was just this amazing experience. I met my husband. I was a big fan. And then we just met hundreds and hundreds of amazing young people who were doing awesome work in a whole bunch of different ways around the country. And so that was the start of my PhD. What was the question?
It must make you feel pretty inspired about where our country is going when you meet all these young people that are doing good work.
It was inspiring. Yeah. It was really inspiring. So they were talking about things. I mean, they were doing all sorts of amazing projects from, like, increasing te reo in schools to, like, having recycling and clothes swaps to social justice, global social justice issues like poverty. Climate change was a big topic, and they were addressing it in a whole bunch of different ways. And then we were providing support in terms of some extra workshops, mm-hmm. A lot of networking, and you know, some things around like how to engage with politicians. But the cool thing about Regeneration, which was the name of the Young Changemakers Network, was that it really valued what the young people were bringing to the table. You know, it wasn't just like, oh, well, here I am, I'm an expert, let me tell you about this. Like, I might run a workshop on like the social psychology of minority change, which is about like how a few people can make a big difference. But then I would go to a workshop on like Kapa Haka and that the young people were running. So it was really, we had this Tuakana Tena model. It was really amazing. A lot of cool work being done. Yeah. And of course, there's a lot of work. At the time when I was doing my PhD, people were saying that there was less engagement, civic engagement, and voting rates had really been decreasing and volunteering rates had been decreasing. But a lot of that might have just been either measurement issues, like what do you mean by volunteering, but also just like, do the young people feel like voting is the best way to make political statements? Mm-hmm. And it might not be, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
Voting's still important, though.
Voting's still important. would you like to explain why voting's important just while we're here?
it's just one way to make positive change, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like it is the system. It's a deeply flawed democracy. It's a deeply flawed system, but it is the system that we have. And, you know, one cool thing that has happened kind of since I was doing this research is that we've got a lot more younger politicians than we did at that point. And
it's so inspiring, I think.
Yeah, it's amazing because when you think about having like a bunch of older people making decisions for the country, yes, they've got experience, but they're not invested necessarily in the same things.
And I think people who are young enough to have to live with the consequences of those decisions are
so important.
So important.
Yeah.
Depending on, how we're going to shape the country that we live in.
Yeah.
Do you feel quite optimistic about the country we live in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
based on that trip,
I mean, those young people are all adults now, which is shocking for me. And doing lots of like doing really cool things. I do. I mean, I love New Zealand. One of the things I was only supposed to be here for a year, and that was a long time ago now. So, and one of the things that I noticed when I came to New Zealand that I felt really disempowered as a young Canadian. I remember there was some policy going through about making national parks. They were calling them working parks, which meant that they could just basically do forestry and stuff in our national and in our provincial parks, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think something like 95% of public feedback about this change was against it, including people from the forestry industry, and they still went ahead and do it. And I felt so disempowered, like it felt like our voices were just really, really not heard. And then I came to New Zealand, and, you know, like you meet politicians, they're just in your community, they're just around you, and you can talk to them friendly, respectfully. You know them, you know, like I've got friends who have grown up and become politicians, and it just feels like there's just a much stronger relationship between the people and politics. And it's obviously it's not perfect, and there's lots of changes that we can make. But I really love that. That's one of many things that I really, really love about Aotearoa.
Well, I think it comes from being in a small country that we have that sort of closeness and close-knit community. I can remember the first time I was properly paying attention to the news here, and you could get all of the weather in one day.
Yeah.
Like, or in one news, in one across the whole country in one bit. And I just thought, oh, wow, we are really connected.
Yeah.
It's a great place to feel like you're making an impact, especially in Dunedin, I think.
Yeah.
I've worked with young people for years, and I now walk down the street and people will be like, oh, hey, miss, how's it going? And
you
can sort of see
that
impact.
Yeah.
Those relationships last for years and years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess the other big thing I've been thinking about is climate change, you know, I'm teaching now in youth work and social services. And I feel like if it's not a topic that is like the entire course, it should at least be brought into it, because working with vulnerable people are the people who are going to be impacted
the first and the most
by climate change. So there's a real need to understand it if we're going to be good community workers, youth workers in the social service sector.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how are you impacting your students with information around the climate?
I don't know if I'm impacting them at all.
Okay. What are you trying to share with them?
I am delivering information about climate change. I guess a large part of it is the link between understanding what climate change is and the urgency around that and the impacts it's going to have on us. You know, like even right here in Dunedin, we've got a large portion of Dunedin that is reclaimed land. What is that going to look like in the future when the sea level rises a little bit, and how we're all interconnected and the environment is interconnected? So stuff around that, but also the impact of policy on our work, on the people that we work with, on our jobs, on, you know, the social services, on education, and how that is all related to each other. So it depends on the topic how I weave it in there. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anyone's quite picked up on it yet, even though I'm very direct. I was like, you could write an assessment on this. And I'd be marking it, and you know I'm interested. No one's quite picked up. You could do a community project on this. You know what is an interesting initiative. So no one's quite picked up on it to that degree. Mm-hmm. But at least I hope it's like in their schema that it's something that they're thinking about if they haven't been thinking about it already.
Okay.
Yeah,
because I mean, ultimately, the young people your students are going to be working with are going to be impacted. So where did that come from, and where are we going with it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you sound like you're curious about a lot of things.
I'm curious about a lot of things.
Yeah, so what else are you curious about at the moment?
What else am I curious about? I've been thinking a lot about Te Ao Māori and decolonizing our education system and what that might look like. Ways that I can introduce Te Ao Māori in my teaching. It's obviously something that I can learn about a lot more, which, as you know, I love. How can we better support our students in this bicultural, wonderful bicultural country that we have?
Yeah. Sounds like so much of your curiosity and your learning and your research comes back to a sense of community.
Mm.
Why do you think that is?
Why do I think that is? Well, I read a paper saying that community was important, so I've just been I don't know.
I got told it in class,
and I thought, sure. I don't know. I think, well, actually, you know what? I did read a paper. I remember reading, what was that one that Baumeister, was it a Baumeister? Sheldon and Baumeister was talking about belonging as a fundamental need, a human need. And I remember reading that in undergrad in Jackie's class, and just that idea about, how important the idea of a need, research-wise, is that it has many parts, but it has to be important when it's fulfilled. It has to do something for us when it's fulfilled, but also do something that's negative when it's not fulfilled. So that's what makes a need. So belonging, when we don't have belonging, what happens to us? And I did a bunch of research on this with Jackie.
Yeah, what does happen?
Oh, it's not great. Another Baumeister study, maybe Twenge and Baumeister, they showed that when people are feeling ostracized, they actually, their IQ lowers. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine that was an experiment. So they made people feel ostracized in a moment, and they performed worse on intelligence tests. And you can imagine how people might feel over a lifetime of various forms of ostracism, like racism. Mm-hmm. So that's one result. Our mental and physical health, both our mental and our physical health, deteriorates. But on the flip side, when we do have a sense of belonging, you know, it can, I don't know if we've found that it increases intelligence, but it does support our mental and physical health in so many ways. So it was, I tried to look at belonging and civic engagement, and it was one of those non-findings. But I did find that belonging was really important for the group of young people that I was working with around the country.
And apparently for you as well, with and everything that you do.
Yeah, and apparently for me, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. So what are you looking forward to in the year to come?
Well, that's a good question. I'm going home to visit my family in Canada in June, which will be lovely. With my family, that's the first time I'll be able to bring my three-year-old back to meet my brother and my cousins, and I'm really looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to my course on supporting youth participation next year. And we're talking about ways of redeveloping our youth work course in ways that better serve the students and the community. So I like that. I think that'll be a really fun and interesting challenge. And of course, just like continuing to improve my teaching and hopefully getting some more research projects under my belt as well, because I do miss research. Yeah.
So what about research? Is it just the curiosity thing that does it for you?
I think it is the curiosity things. I love all parts of the research. I love developing the research question, like thinking about how the question should be asked, because we know now that if we don't ask the questions, we won't ever find the answer. You know, like for a long time in New Zealand, we weren't asking about trans people. And so we just didn't know anything about like how many trans people we had in New Zealand and what kind of supports they need. And, you know, so we weren't asking questions. We didn't know anything. And so that's changing. Where I was reading recently about how in our education system, former refugees are not considered priority students. And that's because we haven't asked those questions yet. So and so we don't have the information yet. So, but they, you know, like logically, we think that that would be a priority learner. We should support them. But we don't have the information. So it's not happening. It's not in the curriculum yet. So, so I love the question, formulating the question, figuring out the best way to answer it, whether that's like surveys, quantitative stuff, or focus groups or interviews. So I like all mixed methods, lots of different styles of research. And then I really love the data analysis. So that was a surprise for me, I think, when I was going through my PhD and I suddenly started to get how statistics can work for us and they can help us answer these complicated questions. And that was a really wonderful moment for me, because I had a lot of data challenges in my PhD that, you know, my supervisors couldn't help me with, and the statistician they brought into the psychology department specifically to help people with statistical questions couldn't help me with. So I spent a lot of time at the end of my PhD with like three different psychology statistics, just statistics textbooks open, and I was reading them and making them work for me. So I love the data analysis part, and and then writing up the reports in the way that makes it accessible to people. I think that's really important as well.
Your joy about research is so obvious when you talk about it.
That's nice. Actually, I'm teaching a research paper at in the Bachelor of Social Services right now, and gosh, I'm so enjoying it. Mm. One of the things I'm enjoying is that my students are awesome and they're asking amazing questions, and I just love it. And so research in social services, that's one of the reasons I went back to do my PhD, because I was working at the Rape Crisis Center. And I was just seeing all these social services that could really use with a little bit of help around like evaluating their programs or like evidence-based practice. Mm-hmm. And so I went back hoping to be able to link that community work up with research. So I love this research course because my students are asking amazing questions, and also because I feel like I can actually answer the questions they have about research. So I feel it makes me feel smart. And I just thought it was so nice.
That was a nice
for a change.
In a world where so much is unknown.
Yes, exactly. Where I feel like I don't have a lot of answers. I can answer questions about research, which is, which is really lovely. Okay. Yeah.
And what's your favorite research project that you've done?
Oh, I cannot pick. I can tell you my least favorite.
Okay. Tell me about that. What's the least favorite research project you've ever done?
Yeah. So I had one where I was a research assistant and I was we'd bring people into a room and then we'd get them to discuss things as a group for a while. And then we'd say there was going to be a group project afterwards and we're going to split them into groups. And then could they they had to pick some people they wanted to work with. And then what they didn't know is that we actually divided the class in half randomly. And half the people in the class, we said, everyone chose to work with you. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. So I don't actually know which group to put you in yet because you just got so many. And then we said, well, while we're sorting this out, just fill out these surveys. So that was the inclusion condition. Mm-hmm. And the exclusion condition was saying, oh my goodness, this hasn't happened before, but no one's actually chosen to work with you for this project. So we don't know what to do with you. So could you just fill out these surveys and we'll like figure out what we're supposed to do and go. And it was like, it was awful. It was awful. And then they would sit, they'd fill out surveys.
So you had to tell them yourself.
That was me doing that job with someone else.
And what was...
And it was so sad. Adrian, it was so sad. It was awful.
Just watch their faces?
Oh, it was heartbreak. And then we were measuring things like their self-esteem and their different types of prejudice. It's important work. It is important. It's like understanding the causes of prejudice. That's why we got permission to do such a mean study.
So the ethics board was like, well,
the ethics board was not excited about it. But and then, you know, they filled out surveys for like 10 minutes or something. And then we were like, okay, everyone, don't worry. This was the study, and we explained the whole thing, and then everyone was like, oh, phew, and everyone, like, you know, wiped their eyes and and said, yeah, that was awful. So
do you
that
wonder
one,
if there were lasting effects, though?
I don't think there were.
What did you see?
So sad. It's interesting because we've got these groups that we belong to, you know, like our group of friends and our families and maybe our colleagues, if we're lucky, that are important to our identity, right? This is social identity. Hear me talking about Aotearoa and, you know, like this is a group that I identify with here in this country. And those are really important to us and they influence us in our behavior in a lot of different ways. But this group that we brought them into, they'd only just met. We made sure they weren't friends beforehand. Mm-hmm. They didn't come in with any friends. They talked for like 10 minutes and they were still heartbroken by the fact that they weren't chosen to be a part of the group. And it influenced them. They had increased levels of sexism and increased levels of, were we looking at? Yeah, we looked at racism against certain groups.
Wow.
So
it made them worse people.
It made them worse people. So we think about the role of like inclusion, and it has all sorts of implications in terms of like what are we seeing online with all these young men feeling excluded and their responses to it. You know, like what do we see in people feeling excluded from education for various reasons? What impact does that have on them? So it's really important work. I started getting nightmares, and then I got a different research assistant. We found a different research assistant who was a bit more, she would be described as a bit more practical than I am. She didn't have a problem with it. She was just like, yeah, of course, data collection, that's fine.
Do you think you were just too empathetic? Or
I think I was too empathetic. Yeah. That's a good thing to have in certain situations, but not when you're trying to study.
That sounds like a terrible study.
Yeah. So that was my least favorite study to work on. And then my favorite, I mean, I got to go on board the Spirit of New Zealand to study enhancing youth resilience. Mm-hmm. That was fun.
So how long are you on board?
It's a big tall ship. They do 10-day programs with 16
teenagers learn how to run the ship themselves, don't they?
Yeah. So it's a really – I encourage if there's any parents or young people out there listening to this, I really encourage you to get involved because it is amazing. It's so much fun. And it has these amazing outcomes. And you make friends. You make Friends for Life. We were studying, it's a really cool program because it's divided into four sections on board. In the first 3 days, it's really hands-on where the crew are really helping the young people mm-hmm. learn about sailing a tall ship. It's a huge tall ship. It's got all these different sails that I can't remember right now because it's a really long time ago. And then they've got a kind of half hands-on where the young people start to take over sailing mm-hmm. the ship in some ways. Hands-off and for the final 3 days. And then on the final day, the trainees elect a captain and a cook and a second-in-command mm-hmm. and a navigator and all the roles. And then they just sail the ship themselves. So it's this amazing skill development experience. Belonging's really important. And it increases their resilience. And what we found with my study, there's been other really important studies that have been done since then, I think, in my opinion. But with my study, which was one of the first, we found that support and self-efficacy, so that feeling of building your sense of efficacy around these new skills that you're learning in a supportive environment is what contributed to resilience. Oh. And I think those two things, like, that can be applied to lots of different situations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any learning situation.
Yeah. And in a supportive environment.
Have some support and, out of the comfort zone, really, isn't it?
And out of your comfort zone. So we had, climbing up the mast and.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm loving hearing little bits about this because I have some of the research from Spirit of Adventure fed into my master's, but I didn't. I only knew it about it from the perspective as a teacher and having spoken to students that had done it. So it's really nice to hear about it from a research point of view.
It was a really cool study, in part as well because we got to do a follow-up like many months after they finished the program. Mm-hmm. And what we found was, and this is really different from other youth development programs, is that the resilience was still high. Even in often cases, they were actually doing their exams when we were asking them to fill out their final surveys. And their resilience was still high. So it was kind of...
From this
10-day experience, it was kind of moving into other parts of their lives and other situations, which is really what you want to see.
That's wild.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And I guess suddenly for me, that suggests like school camp has a whole new meaning for me when I think about that. Mm-hmm. Like sending my kids out into the woods and telling them they do have to do the waterfall hike and...
You should give them some surveys.
Yeah.
I should give them some surveys.
You should give them do some research.
Do some questionnaires, yeah.
Yeah. But it sounds like it's got some lasting effects.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Well, unrelated question session. Do you have any questions for me?
Oh, that's a good question. What do you like about research? Have you already talked about that?
Oh, I have never talked about what I like about research. I like the idea of a solution, and I know that that is not the point of research, and it also never comes to that, but I really like the idea that there are problems that could get solved.
Yeah.
And that we just need to move towards the stuff that works.
Yeah.
Is my theory, and so the stuff that makes me feel good, I, as a high school teacher, was sort of getting presented with a lot of problems I did not know how to deal with. And I had a psychology background, so I think that's why I knew, like, I was well out of my depth.
Yeah.
So I started doing some research around what you do in these situations. I started training as a counselor, and then I thought, oh, goodness, I do not want to be a counselor. So I stopped that after my first paper and then discovered the Penn Resiliency Program.
Yeah.
And was looking at that and looking at how we could sort of import these events that or these interventions that worked in other areas to see if we could bring them to schools.
Yeah.
And that's sort of where I got my start in my most recent research.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you able to apply your findings?
So really interesting. As you might know, collecting data in an educational setting is notoriously difficult. A lot of incomplete data sets. The most significant finding was the sense of belonging and how that was a protective factor against not so much anxiety, but depression. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but none of like any of the intervention stuff. I was like, we're going to do some positive psychology and we'll do Martin Seligman's Three Good Things and we'll do gratitude and we'll do the character strengths and virtues. And none of that had any, I couldn't measure any of that effectively.
Yeah.
So that was kind of disappointing.
Yeah. But belonging.
Yeah, belonging, yeah. Pretty important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we'll get back to teaching and having, like, baby pandas in your lecture slides.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff all creates belonging
that
as well
stuff
because
matters.
It's relationship building.
Yeah, exactly right.
It's not
right.
just adorable, although that's part of it.
It's also a theme.
It's also a theme. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great, great design choices. But, yeah, it, of course, is about relationship and who's there. And anyone will tell you. They'll go to the lectures of the people they want to listen to and the people they want to be there with. And,
yeah.
and if they feel like they've got a relationship, that's the bit
yeah,
that matters
that is
for high school students. That's,
yeah.
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 It's a huge part. And it's quite different, I think, teaching for that reason. It's quite different from lecturing.
Yes.
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, so the ways we're moving forward.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for this conversation, Jill. It's
Thanks,
been
Adrian.
So cool to hear about all the things you're curious about and all the research that you've done in your
yes.
life and get a lot more puzzle pieces to my colleague who sits at the desk behind me.
Not just baby pandas.
Not just baby pandas.
Mostly baby pandas.
Mostly that, but also some
also
other
some
things,
other
too.
Stuff. Yeah.
Oh, well,
cool.
Thanks so much, Jill.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Adrian.
Okay. Ka mihi. Thank you for listening to Spotlight on Academics We Know. Thanks to Otago Polytechnic, our people make a better world. Kia tu ki te tahi. If you'd like to listen to this episode again, you'll find the podcast on Otago Access Radio's website, oar.org.nz. This has been So Ok. Ma te wa.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.